Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, brought to you by Blue Wire. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Carter Rodriguez is taking the week off. He is done with me. He's done with my BS. But we still got a good show for you here. Today we are potting with the enemy, or at least the old enemy. And that enemy is Sean Woodley, host on Locked On Raptors. Sean, how's it going?
It's good, man. It's nice talking to a Cavs fan without like the impending doom of what's about to come at the hands of LeBron sort of being the umbrella under which the conversation takes place. It's pretty good.
I was about to ask. Well, let's start here, because over the last couple of days, Raptors have clinched a playoff spot. The Cavs have officially been eliminated from the playoffs. How nice is it for you to not see us this year? To not even have that as a remote possibility?
The standings this season just make all of the bad things that happened over the last 5 years, just they're gone now. I don't think about them at all, ever. I don't fall asleep thinking about game one of the second round last year, even a little bit. I don't think about the off-glass alley-oop in the second round the season prior. None of that stuff even with me anymore, because the Raptors are in second place and the Cavs are going nowhere. It's fantastic.
Man, that off-glass alley-oop from Kyrie to LeBron is still one of my favorite basketball moments ever. It's right up there with the reverse on Damari Carroll where LeBron dented the basketball. Those I will just always hold very, very fondly.
I think that's the quickest a series has ended in the history of the NBA. It was like 2 minutes into the game. It's like, yeah, no, this is over. Did you drink a beer in that game too? I feel like that was the same game.
Ooh. Yeah. I feel like that was the following year. I think that was the 2017. Same year as the alley-oop, but not the reverse and Damari. Because that was the year where Damari was the LeBron stopper, and then the following with the beer was the PJ Tucker as a LeBron.
That's right, yeah. All the LeBron stoppers. If only Joey Graham could have been around for the LeBron era, things might have gone.
Hey. Joey Graham did stop LeBron in 2010 as his teammate. So let's not forget Cavs legends Joey Graham, Anthony Parker, and Jamario Moon on the 2010 team.
Is that like the 10-11 team, or is that the year before?
That was the 2009-2010, the one with Shaq, the year where LeBron quit in the playoffs.
So I remember going to a game, like, I think the first, yeah, it was like the second home game for the Raptors after both Bosch and LeBron left for Miami, and it was so dark and depressing. It was like Samardo Samuels, and I think Manny Harris was playing. And then for the Raptors, it was like Jarrett Jack getting all the touches and Bargs fully like taking the reins of the offense. And that game was so depressing to me that I didn't watch basketball for like 2.5 years. I just like stopped. I came home from school for my birthday, I think, to go to this game, which was silly. Like, I was in school in Ottawa, Ontario, for the American listeners. It's like a 4-hour drive from where I was living. And so I came back home, went to the game, and it was so dark and depressing. I was just like, you know what? I'm good. I'm going to check out for a little bit. And then I didn't actually get back into it. Like, I would watch the standings. I don't think I watched a game for, like, maybe 2.5 years. And then it was the first Rudy Gay trade that, like, wrote me back in, because I was like, hey, Rudy Gay, he's good, right? He was the guy that should have taken instead of Andrea Bargnani. And I was sorely mistaken, but I got roped back in by all that. So, but yeah, the Cavs and Raptors have been intertwined in a very strange way for me, at least.
I was going to ask if next season is going to be a repeat of that depressing matchup between the two teams, but at that point, we're already going to have Jetty, we're going to have Kevin Love, RJ Barrett, Tristan, Sexton. So we might be in a lot better place than you guys after Kawhi leaves for LA.
I don't even know. It's so weird. I like Kawhi a lot, and he makes the team extremely good. And I am not sold on the idea that he's just going to leave, because the Raptors are really good. And if they
make, oh no, his bags are packed. He's gone.
Okay, sure, fine. He thinks it was pretty. I'm going to hang on to that forever. He's maybe sticking around. I think it's like 40% he stays. But that's just me being overly optimistic, or just like doubting the legitimacy of the Clippers as a franchise. Like, I'm still not going to believe the Clippers aren't the Clippers until they show they're not the Clippers.
See, Carter's all over that. Like, he's like, why are we asking? The comparison he made was that the Clippers are Tobias Funke. this at the water cooler. How about that, Tobias? And that's basically what the Clippers are doing. They're just going around saying that everybody's interested in them. And I think there's some validity to them being a destination, but at the same time, I could also see them remain the Clippers.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to believe in yourself and talk yourself into a higher plane of existence. If you can do it, congratulations. But, like, you're still the Clippers, man. And, yeah, they're going to make the playoffs, and they're better than what maybe, like, they were expected to be. But, I don't know. I'm looking at the Raptors roster and thinking, like, why wouldn't Kawhi just want to play with these dudes? Yes, Toronto, Canada, blah, they're home for half the winter. It doesn't really matter. He lives garage to garage anyway, like most people do up here at this time
right.
of year, no matter what. So I was thinking this watching, or I've been thinking this watching Pascal Siakam for the last couple of weeks. And I'm just thinking, like, is Pascal Siakam better than any player on the Clippers that Kawhi would be, like, supposedly going to join? I think he is. Ooh. Like, I think Siakam is really, really good. And his sort of development this season into what he is, like, I think – he probably is, like, it's probably good for the recruiting pitch to Kawhi, I would say. It's like, oh, yeah, now we have this guy who's, like, a fringy type star. Like, maybe he's not, like, a guy who's going to score 25 a game and be, like, a star like that. But he is, like, a fringe all-star, like, Draymond Greeny sort of tier of player. And, like, why wouldn't you want to play with a guy like that? A guy who's not going to eat into your touches but also make you very good. I don't know. I think the Raptors are, you know, I'm obviously biased, but – I think they have a pretty good thing they're selling outside of sometimes it's cold up here.
Yeah.
But it's like snowing in LA now too. Like, climate change is coming very. So maybe it doesn't even matter.
That's a good point. To me, the thing was always, okay, is Kyle Lowry going to be the sidekick that they're pitching to him? Because he is obviously regressing to some extent here. And being 34 years old, 5'10", bad back, like, it to me it was just kind of a concerning thing if that's who you're pitching, whereas the Clippers can say, hey, we got a lot of good role guys, we got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and we'd be able to add another max guy. But I do feel a lot better about the Raptors because I was very skeptical of them this season. They just didn't seem like they were clicking in the same way. A lot of it actually has to do with Nick Nurse. I think I would feel a lot better about this team if they had Dwayne Casey, even though I think it was probably time to move on. I just don't really think of Nurse as the solution. But adding Marc Gasol really, to me, is a game changer, because what the Raptors had struggled with in the past was when the Cavs, in particular, would trap Lowry and DeRozan and make other guys make decision. And often that was Serge Ibaka making a decision about 10 seconds too slow, or just immediately making the wrong decision, or just making other guys beat them, which was always kind of a failure for them. But when you have a guy that's legitimately 7 feet and is just a magician with the basketball in Marc Gasol and is able to find guys and find the open man immediately, I think that does change a lot of things for them. And for that reason, I do feel more confident about their ability to make the finals, even though right now I'd favor the Bucks.
Yeah, I liked the Gasol trade a lot. I know a lot of people were kind of apprehensive, and a lot of it was like, I don't know how familiar Cavs fans are with the JV Hive, but
I was about to say a lot of that's JV Hive propaganda.
A lot of people think Jonas Valanciunas is just like Eastern European Shaq and just needs an opportunity. And like, I think Jonas is very good, and I'm glad he's eating a little bit in Memphis, but there's a reason that Memphis loses a lot of games. It's because like Valanciunas is one of the best matchup dependent players you'll find. And I think the biggest thing with Gasol is like, he can play in any of the big four or big three series that the Raptors might have to play in the playoffs against the Bucks, the Celtics, or the Sixers. Like, he can be on the court in any one of those series. Whereas like maybe one of those series, Jonas could be on the fourth floor. And like sometimes against Al Horford on the right day, but a lot of times that's not really a matchup you want either. And like, Raptors have been really good with Ibaka against Al Horford this season anyway. So like, it wouldn't even, you'd have like kind of diminishing returns on Jonas in that series as well too. So I just kind of think he works in all those series. Like, he's a monster post defender. He's going to work well against Embiid. I'm so not worried about the Sixers for so many reasons, but this just adds to the reasons why I'm not worried about the Sixers. And like, he can play against Brook Lopez and sort of make Brook Lopez work and stretch him out and kind of throw what Brook Lopez does so well against Brook Lopez and see if that can kind of run him off the floor. I really like what Gasol's brought. His numbers haven't been like eye popping or anything, but there have just been sequences where they kind of hit this ceiling where it's like, oh yeah, like this team's going to be just fine. Yes, there are chemistry concerns or whatever because they're not playing together all the time and Kawhi's sitting out for load management and stuff like that, which like stop, just find something new to be mad at, Raptors fans, if that's what you're on, it's fine. And if you want to, if Kawhi has hypochondriac tendencies and he wants to sit and like it's in his interest to sit as well, you're doing the right thing by ceding to what he wants because.
Well, I got one question with that though. Like, yeah, if you're in a 7-game series, how many games does he play?
He's playing every game. He's not going to sit. This is the whole point of it. Like he said last week that it's pretty much just 82 practices that the regular season is going into the playoffs. Like this is what he said. This was an actual quote, and like, I can't disagree with him. The team's insanely good. They're kind of coasting right now. They have some issues, but they're all issues that I think, like, once playoff rotation shortened and Jeremy Lin and Norm Powell are playing less and Patrick McCaw's not playing at all, then they're just going to be fine. And it's just going to be a really good team with really high IQ guys who are going to figure it out. And I don't know. I guess my thing from last season is, like, last season poisoned me so much because the Raptors were like
it
last year.
It really should have.
Yeah, they were like last year's – they were like the Nuggets or the Bucks from this year, right? It was just like all joy, all fun, totally unexpected, and just like the numbers were insane. The net rating was through the roof, and it was like, hey, maybe this can work. Depth and a bench. Like, this is amazing. And then you get to the playoffs, and oh, yeah, depth and benches don't matter anymore, although top-end talent, and what this team has now that they did not have last year is a lot of top-end talent and dudes who have just like been there. And I know that's very simplistic and reductive to be like, oh yeah, but these guys have experience, but they do. And like Kawhi, Danny Green, and Marc Gasol, throwing those three dudes into this mix is like, oh yeah, like those are three guys who I absolutely would like on my team in the playoffs, who have shown that they're very good in the playoffs and their games translate very well. So it's just something they haven't had before. And so this is kind of, I don't know. I teased this when we were talking about doing this podcast, but I kind of have this take that this year's Raptors are last year's Cavs, where they haven't quite.
I'm already offended. Continue.
they haven't quite figured it out entirely, and like they performed better this season than last year's Cavs did because, oh my God, that was a disaster. But like they are not really clicking, and people are concerned about chemistry and fit and all this stuff. And you have like this really fun upstart Bucks team that everyone's really getting on board with and being like, yeah, they're amazing. I love the Bucks so much. They're so great. It's totally going to work in the playoffs. But I just kind of think the Raptors have more top end talent and the gap between Giannis and their second best player is pretty significant. And I'm worried about how that's all going to translate. Like we saw Eric Bledsoe get punked by Terry Rozier last year in the playoffs. And like, I haven't forgotten about that. And I just kind of think this Raps team with Kawhi is sort of the stand in for LeBron. It very much feels like a team that once the playoffs come, people are going to be like, oh yeah, like this is the team, and they're just going to choke teams out. That's kind of how.
See, to me, I think Middleton's better than any non-Kawhi player on Toronto. Like I've firmly been on the bandwagon that he's better than DeRozan, and I think that he is taking kind of another step up this year. He was kind of like the hipster's all-star forever, but like he's a legitimately great player. Like he can create an isolation, he can defend multiple positions, and like to me the biggest thing that makes me feel better about the Raptors is I think now Kyle Lowry can be your fourth best player in a series and you can still win the series. Like I think you could legitimately have Kawhi, Gasol, and Siakam all play better than him, and I know Lowry has been better the last 2 years in the playoffs. His percentages are a lot better, but a lot of that is still he's giving you 15, 16 points, 7 assists, and he's doing it within the flow of the offense. He's not going to give you like the Kyrie or Damian Lillard 35 points in a series and just willing a team to victory. The Raptors needed more than 15 points per game against the Cavs last year, and he wasn't able to give it to them. So I understand that the percentages are better. He wasn't falling off a cliff in the same way. And even when he was falling off a cliff in years past, he was still a net positive, but he doesn't have that kind of takeover ability. And I think the Raptors have kind of insulated themselves from that concern to some extent with Gasol.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Siakam has kind of done that too. Like, I don't know. I still think Lowry's the second best player on the Raptors. I think he's very, the understated impact is still very much a thing with him. And he is sort of kind of finding his offense a little bit more. I think since Gasol got to town, it's kind of benefited Lowry more than anybody else, because Lowry doesn't have to play make every single time down the court. He can dump it into to Gasol, and Gasol can make some stuff from the elbow, and Lowry can kind of hang out off ball and wait for catch and shoot opportunities and all that good stuff that he's very good at. And he's looked a little bit more sort of willing to search for his own offense lately. And I think that bodes very well, because the entire reason Kyle Lowry became Kyle Lowry was he started to become like this amazing pull-up three-point shooter. And he hasn't done that, or wasn't doing that for a big chunk of this season, and he's kind of discovering that lately. And like, I still think Kyle Lowry at the peak of his powers is still probably the second best player in – like you're saying, in the comparison to Chris Middleton, like, give me Kyle Lowry, the guy who, like, does everything on the court all the time and is always kind of mixing things up and is always in there and also shooting well. Like, that version of Kyle is better than, I think, Chris Middleton. A lot of times when I'm, like, thinking about teams, I like to, like, check in on how fans of a team feel about a certain guy. And Bucks fans hate Chris Middleton. I don't know what that is.
I do not follow a single Bucks fan that hates Chris Middleton. But
I think there are a lot of, like, I guess it's like maybe not the smartest fans in the world, but like there are a lot of people who are just like angry at Chris Middleton all the time. I think Eric Name from The Athletic has kind of been a big denouncer of these people, and probably for good reason. Chris Middleton's very good. But I do think there's a lot of things that he does that are just like, yeah, like he kind of disappears for games. And like the Raptors, I think, have done a pretty good job defending him in the past. And I think what we're going to see in a potential Raptors-Bucks matchup is like, you know, you could say, oh yeah, throw Kawhi on Giannis and just try to make it work. I don't think that's the way to do it. I think you throw Kawhi on Chris Middleton and you kind of choke off that secondary offense. And like Middleton hasn't really shown that he's able to work around Kawhi this season very much when they've played. And like the Raptors have enough guys who can at least just like stand in Giannis's way and be fine. Like OG has actually been surprisingly against Giannis in the past. It's kind of strange, but he has been.
I'm getting flashbacks, man. I'm getting flashbacks. We're just going to throw bodies at LeBron. I'm getting that vibe from you right now.
Okay, fair enough. And maybe I'm just like Stockholm syndrome forever, but like. Giannis is different than LeBron. Like, he's still not the complete package that LeBron was. And Chris Middleton is very key to what they do. And I think, like, the Raptors now have the defensive resources where they're not throwing all of their very good defenders at the one guy who they need to stop. Like, they can save some other dudes for the other guys they need to stop. Like, Danny Green is also out there to guard whatever, Bledsoe or Middleton if he wants. Like, they just have way more defensive horses. And I think that matters. And I think, like Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby, again, like no one's stopping Giannis, but I think they are guys who like you can throw different looks. They kind of defend differently and you can kind of, you know, mix things up and sort of keep Giannis on his toes. Like it's been a formula that's worked for the team in the past. So that's why I'm scared of the Bucks more than any other team in the East. That's for sure. And I sound like I'm underrating them or whatever, because they're terrifying and they're really good. And if they can maintain their sort of, commitment to their identity in the playoffs, then great. I just think playoff basketball makes it extremely hard to commit to your identity, because the entire focus of NBA of playoff defenses is to get you away from your identity. And I think the Raptors in that respect have a bit more of an advantage, because they don't really have an identity per se. They're just like, yeah, we can beat you in this way and this way and this way also. And I think they can kind of be more of a chameleon team than the Bucks, who are very, very, very good at what they do. But I'm not sure once that's tested, are they going to be able to sort of adapt and play a different way? That is what's my sort of biggest hang up with the Bucks. But like, again, if they can stick to what makes them really good, then, you know, they're terrifying. But I guess, you know, maybe my thoughts of that 60-win Hawks team under Budenholzer not being able to change on the fly and just kind of getting suffocated doing the same thing that they tried to do in the regular season, maybe that's giving me pause. They obviously never had a Giannis on those teams, and Giannis is horrifying, but I don't know. That's my hang up with the Bucks, but like that's, I guess, a minor one, because they're extremely good and terrifying, and I maybe should not be so quick to, you know, crap on the idea of Chris Middleton being all that you and the people who love Chris Middleton say he is. I just, I don't know. There's some noise about Chris Middleton, just like people who follow the team daily. And again, the smarter people probably don't have this take, but like I kind of, if enough people are mad about it, then maybe there's something to it. I don't know. I'd probably be getting way too ahead of myself.
That's a very Trump-esque rant. A lot of people are saying this. Good people, the best. Many people are saying that Chris Middleton actually sucks.
Well, like Chris Bottomton.
I definitely, like, there's some part of me that, like, worries about the Budenholzer thing just because of the Hawks and how that went. But at the same time, it's like, okay, they aren't being led by a fraudulent Al Horford. That really helps. There is no Tristan Thompson in the playoffs, so that's probably – I mean, that's probably – Al Horford probably got drunk for like a week or two once he realized after the deadline that Tristan wasn't getting traded to a playoff team. That probably made his damn life. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting because I'm curious to see how the Raptors do this year because in the past, teams really kind of mismatch hunted against them. Like they would find DeRozan, they'd run their offense at DeRozan, at Valanciunas, and that was basically the entire offense. I mean, the Cavs ate with that Kevin Love, Kyle Korver two-man game off ball with LeBron, and like that, they basically just ran that all series. There was no adjustments, nothing else that they had to do, and that led to a sweep. But you can't really do that now. Like, in theory, the starting lineup of Kyle Lowry, Danny Green, Kawhi Leonard, Pascal Siakam, and Marc Gasol is just tremendous defensively. Mm-hmm. And if it falls apart, it's going to be in a way that I don't necessarily see coming because I just don't see the weakness there. Mm-hmm. But thinking back to what the Cavs did to the Raptors last year, is there a team in the East that makes you worry? Like, outside of the Bucks, is there one that's like, oh, they could potentially give us a matchup issue that leads to some sort of nightmarish scenario where we lose?
Yeah, for a while that was Boston. And a lot of it is tied to Kyrie because they've never really had an answer for Kyrie before.
That's fair.
But it's actually kind of interesting. The last couple of weeks, they haven't played Boston. I mean, they destroyed Boston when they played them, but it was a couple other games other than the Boston game that were kind of maybe a little comforting to me. So they played in back-to-back games. They played Portland, actually two out of three games. They played Portland and they played Houston a few days later. They beat Portland. They lost to Houston. But they defended Dame Lillard and James Harden extremely well. And that's not something they've done before. Guys who are like those, I mean, whatever Harden's position is, like ball dominant, like guys who
guard, can shoot,
but also kind of take you to the hoop and like just kind of are very hard to negotiate. That was that's the bugaboo that Jonas Valanciunas just could not shake. It was he could never kind of decide how to defend those guys. Was he going to hang back? Was he going to come up and challenge up high? Was he going to? It ultimately ended up he just got stuck in no man's land too much, and he got cooked. But with Gasol and with Ibaka, like I think they've kind of surprised me with how adept they've been recently, and they haven't done this much. This might just be some sort of like playoff ramp up type defense. But they haven't done this much where they bring the bigs up high to, you know, to either trap the ball handler or hedge high or whatever. But they've started to do that a little bit lately, in particular with Lillard and with Harden, and it worked really well. Like, they defended both of those guys extremely well. Harden was like 12 of 30 against the Raps. He had 35, but like a lot of that was just like dumb pull-up, step-back stuff late in the game, which like James Harden's going to do. But for the most part, I liked their game plan against him very much, and they kind of oscillated back and forth between sending the big up high and then having them drop back. So we saw kind of a little bit of everything from how they're going to defend guys like Harden or Lillard or Kyrie Irving, and I kind of liked that. And I think they've kind of found something with this sort of group of big men that they're able to kind of do both of those things because both Ibaka and Gasol are smart enough defensively to kind of make it work, whereas Valanciunas has never had the defensive IQ to negotiate that the decision-making process that those kind of guards kind of impose on you. Right. So I think against Kyrie, they're going to be okay. There's also like this like secret weapon lineup that we've seen maybe like 5 minutes of all season, but I think is just going to be horrifying when they bust it out. And that's Siakam at center with like OG, Kawhi, Danny Green, and Lowry. And like, again, they've used it for like maybe 3 minutes in one game against the Pelicans, and then like I think maybe for like 2 minutes against Boston at one point, and that's all we've seen of it. And coming into the year, I was like, I hope we see Pascal at center all the time because that lineup seems like it would rule. And like, I guess that's the thing, they've never been this like versatile ever, and that was a big problem with the Cavs, right? Is like the Cavs would go one way at them and they're like, yeah, well, we got nothing else to do, so we'll just hope this works and hope they miss some shots. And that's kind of what happened in game one last year when the Cavs missed everything and they almost won it at the end.
Yeah.
And Valanciunas just like connect on one of those 11 tip-ins.
Yeah, the Cavs would come with a one move checkmate and that would just throw everything off.
Exactly. And the Raptors aren't really prone to that anymore because they don't really have any bad defenders. Like, at least not guys who are going to play significant roles in the playoffs. Like, I don't think we're going to see a lot of Jeremy Lin in the playoffs based on what we've seen from him in the first couple weeks he's been with the Raptors. I don't think we're going to see much of anyone who's like a liability on one end of the floor. You know, CJ Miles was playing real playoff minutes last season. Valanciunas, DeRozan, like, it's just not the same team. And like, I know people will still say, oh, Raptors in the playoffs, blah, 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 blah. But like, they're just not the same team. And Kawhi is such a game changer. And Danny Green, like the greatest throw-in in the history of throw-ins, and Siakam's development, and OG has been a monster defensively lately. Like, and you don't have a big man who's just so prone to being picked apart in the pick and roll that, like, even the teams like Boston that I was once scared of scare me a little bit less, because like, I think the Raptors are always going to have a counter. And like, yes, this is dependent on, you know, after Kawhi, some second option stepping up every single game. And the nice thing about this Raptors team, it doesn't have to be the same guy every game. You kind of alluded to this with Kyle, right? Like, Kyle can be the fourth best guy. If Siakam goes for 25 on 15 shots, which he's prone to do quite a bit, like, oh, yeah, like, they're fine. And they've got the production you need. And if Kyle's hanging out, putting up 10 a game, but also racking up 12 assists because he's kind of dictating the offense and controlling the flow of the game, then I think that's a pretty good formula for the Raptors. So I sound so dumb and overconfident right now. But like, I guess I just believe in the complexion of the team in a way I never had before. Whether or not that translates to actual playoff success, we'll see. Like, the Bucks are obviously very good, and like, it might not work out. And Nick Nurse, like, yeah, I'm not entirely sold on Nurse as a coach yet. I think the team is kind of talented and smart enough that it almost will not even matter as long as you don't have a Jason Kidd out there coaching. I think most teams are fine with a lot of talent with a so-so head coach. But yeah, we'll see how it all works out. I am just, there's not a team that I'm looking at and being like, man, they have no way to defend that team anymore. It's not the way it is. They can defend anybody because they just have horses up and down the roster that you're not going to get played out of a series.
Yeah, for sure. And the other thing is, the two players that were most responsible for the way the Raptors playoffs have gone are no longer in the conference. And that's
Patrick Patterson and Damari Carroll. God damn it.
Well, Damari Carroll's still in the conference. I was going to go.
The Nets don't count.
I was going to go, hey, you might see the Nets in the first round. So
yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, you can relive those demons again.
God, I hate the Nets so much. Anyway, carry on.
Well, I was going to say LeBron and DeRozan, but
yes.
Yeah. One thing that, so with Nick Nurse, because to me, he's a fairly big question mark at times. Do you think sometimes he gets a little too cute with his lineups and adjustments? It's almost like, because Dwayne Casey would never make adjustments, Nick Nurse feels like he always has to. And sometimes I feel like that's cost them late in games this season.
Oh, yeah. There's like a whole just sort of like running joke that he's like this brain genius that he just overthinks himself every single time. Like, it's very much a thing. And it's funny because people hated Dwayne Casey because he wouldn't try anything. And now people are like really railing on Nick Nurse because it's like, just stick with something, please, dude. Like, for more than 2 minutes at a time, just like give it some run.
Well, it's a good thing that after they had all those issues offensively and figuring out what to do in the playoffs, they solved that by promoting the architect of their offense to head coach.
Yeah, I mean, it's the, I don't have a problem with Nurse per se. I'm so just like agnostic on coaches, really. Like, I don't really buy into like the cult of most coaches. I think like some are obviously better than others. And like here's the thing. Yes, Mike Budenholzer's done a fantastic job with Milwaukee, but I think their success is much more a function of them no longer having Jason Kidd and or Martin Freeman's character from season one of Fargo coaching the team. Like, they're just like, it wasn't hard to say, hey, Giannis and shooters, go do your thing. They had just dolts of coaches before that wouldn't do that. And it wasn't hard to say, hey, stop trapping every single pick and roll. This isn't going to work. This leads to very bad things. And now they just have like a non-idiot coaching them. So like, yes, Budenholzer's done a great job. I don't think that was a particularly hard fix considering how good Giannis is and how sort of well-suited the pieces that were already there kind of were to him and his skills.
Yeah, and I think it's the same thing with players too, where the leap from like a terrible player to league average is a lot bit – it has a bigger impact than going from league average to elite. And it's the same thing with coaches. Like a terrible coach that doesn't want to be there or has no idea what they're doing, just getting to league average makes a big difference. And I think Budenholzer is better than league average.
Yeah.
So it's just – it's a massive difference when you look at the comparison to what they had in the past.
Yeah, and I don't think Nurse is a bad coach. Like, I think there are some flashes where it's like, oh, my God, this dude is a genius. Like, when he first put out that Pascal at center lineup against the Pelicans for a game, it, like, really worked for a bit. They ended up getting some, like, unlucky bounces and stuff like that, make or miss league and all that stuff. But it looked, like, fantastic. And, like, the only reason the Pelicans won is because Etuan Moore hit, like, 3 32-footers, and that was it, because they couldn't generate anything else. It's like, yeah, like, that looks great. Why aren't you doing that more, Nick? It's just, like, when he finds these little pockets of goodness, he doesn't really, like, flesh it out at all. And then he'll also have, like, I don't know. This has been a thing all year where people are mad about the late game offense and it's like, stop giving it to Kawhi to ISO. And it's like, I don't know. I'm cool with that. He's Kawhi Leonard. He's very good at that. He's one of the best ISO guys in the league. And they're like 11-4 in games decided by 3 or less points. Like, they're pretty good in those situations too. And they have like a better net rating in clutch situations than any of the best teams in the East as well. So like, I don't really, and then he'll have these like little flourishes where whether it's Kawhi not being in the lineup or something else, he'll have like these amazing like brain genius like late game plays where it's like, oh yeah, it's the end of the game against the Pistons and you draw this like back screen to get Gasol in the corner on the far side of the court from the inbound and Lowry finds him for like a beautiful wide open three. It just happens to miss, but that kind of goes forgotten because it was a miss. But it was like, my God, why would you waste that amazing play call in the regular season against Detroit? Like, that's incredible. He's drawn a couple game winners up for Danny Green that have been really well designed too. So like, I think he's got it in him. A lot of the time, I think he just kind of rests on the laurels of the very good team and says, all right, Kawhi, like, you're awesome. Go score, please. And I think that's kind of been maybe one of the biggest detriments of Nick Nurse is that he came in and from the very beginning, he would just have, like, this smirk on his face when everyone was like, when anyone would ask him about, like, the team, he's like, yeah, man, we're awesome. I'm trying not to screw it up because, like, it's a pretty weird situation for him to get his first head coaching job. And then, oh, they trade for Kawhi Leonard a month later. And now there's all these expectations and pressure and all this stuff. Like, I almost wonder, had the Raptors known they were going to get Kawhi, would they have made the Dwayne Casey decision? That's kind of an interesting what if.
This would be like Dwayne Casey's wet dream of a team. Like, especially with Danny Green and Marc Gasol as well. Like,
and especially since he's coaching like Reggie Jackson now. I mean, like, I feel bad for Dwayne because he didn't really deserve to get fired. It was one of those things where, like, you know, a relationship ending doesn't necessarily have to be anybody's fault. It just kind of comes to an end and it makes sense for
both. It's usually been my fault in my life, if I'm being honest.
I'm an unimpeachable significant other, so never had that problem.
So what you're saying is Nick Nurse is essentially David Blatt
with less
fighter pilot.
He doesn't talk about how he won titles in England.
That's fair. That is
man, I won 2 G League titles with Rio Grande all the time, so he doesn't quite have that in him.
Can I just say that the phrase brain genius is the dumbest and most hilarious thing I've ever heard? Is there another type of genius, like, oh, he's a foot genius?
Yeah. Oh, that's, you know, I'm sure they're, I don't know. Maybe not. Yeah. It's very silly. Whatever.
I don't know. I like it, but it's also the dumbest thing I've ever heard. So
that's pretty much everything that you hear on the internet.
It's right in my wheelhouse, essentially.
Yeah. But yeah, I think Nurse is fine. I don't think he's like going to actively sabotage them in the playoffs. And like I said, I think the talent on the team is good enough that it's just going to kind of overcome any sort of shortcomings. But it would be nice to see like a consistent, you know, second unit that they roll out there that actually makes sense. And in fairness, like, I know a lot of people, like, right now the biggest thing is like, stop playing Jeremy Lin and Patrick McCaw together. It's ridiculous. And it's like, okay, it's a regular season game at the start of March. They're already locked into the 2 seed. Do you really want to be like maximizing your rotations right now where like you're going to maybe, I know you don't have to necessarily play all your guys all that many minutes to sort of stagger. Like, you can do that intelligently and not stagger and play guys tons of minutes. But, like, it's just it doesn't feel very pressing to me right now to like find the maximized version of the rotation. One, because there's like a month to go before the season's over and they have like a really easy schedule and they're locked into the two seats, so there's not any urgency for me. And also because like Fred VanVleet's not playing and he's going to be a pretty key part in whatever second unit actually ends up happening. And like, I just think a lot of the guys right now, when else are you going to see if Patrick McCaw can give you something in the playoffs? When else are you going to see if Jeremy Lin is actually worth playing? Like, give them the run now where it doesn't really matter and just kind of see a month from now. So I kind of understand what Nurse is doing from that regard. Like, he's not going to cut it down to an 8-man rotation yet. There's no sense to do that. And I think he probably thinks too, like, yeah, this team's insanely good. It'll be fine once I get the best players in the court at all times and we don't have any of the bad players playing. Like, that seems to make sense to me, but I'm not a brain genius, so who am I to say?
All right, guys, we'll get back to our interview with Sean Woodley in just a second, but before we do, gotta give a quick shout out to our sponsors. First is the return of MyBookie. The first weekend of the NCAA tournament is the greatest betting event of the year. Whether you like filling out a bracket, picking a national champion, predicting first-round upsets, or all of the above, MyBookie is the perfect home for your March Madness fun. Will Zion Williamson and his teammates cement their legacy at Duke and win a title? Can Virginia get past its loss to a 16 seed last year? And can Kentucky get back to the Final Four? If you know the answers, or even if you don't, MyBookie is the place to get in on the action. They have something for everyone, even you, multiple bracket guy. MyBookie has been in business for years. Their goal is to give you the best customer service in the business. And the best part is, they pay out fast when you win. I'm talking 48 hours. Bet with the best. Then kick back and enjoy March Madness while you watch your picks cash in. Deposit with MyBookie today with promo code BLUEWIRE for a 50% sign-up bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word. With MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. Now for our second sponsor, the return, Harry's Razors. I've got my own Harry's Razors. Carter's got his Harry's Razors. We absolutely love it. And we are continuing to team up with Harry's because they got our back. Go to harrys.com/bluewire to save $10 on a value trial set, which includes a 5-raid blazer with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. You get all of that for just $3 shipped right to your door. Enough with the cheap razors, it's totally worth trying Harry's. Harry's has fixed shaving by combining a simple, clean design with quality and durable blades at a fair price. Harry's founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. Harry's bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. Join the 10 million who have already tried Harry's. Claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Again, make sure you go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for just $3. And now, back to making fun of Sean.
What would you say a successful season would be for the Raptors? Like, what do they have to achieve? Is there a difference between what you would consider a successful season and what you believe is necessary to lock down Kawhi?
I would say the finals are probably what'll lock down Kawhi. I would just say not getting embarrassed when they eventually do lose. You know what I mean? Like, they lose in the conference finals to the Bucks, but it's just like this Bucks or this team of destiny, and they're just kind of rolling. But the Raptors put up a good fight and don't have any obvious, like, oh, yeah, Kyle Lowry had 0 points again. Like, I think if they lose admirably in a conference finals, that's probably fine with me. I think the second round people will be disappointed, even if, you know, there's probably no shame in any of the four teams in the East losing in the second round if it breaks down the way it should after this Pacers hell stretch of the schedule is finished up and it's the 1-4 that everyone kind of expects. There will be panic and consternation from whichever teams lose, but I don't know if there's necessarily shame because all four teams are really good. So as long as you don't get embarrassed, then I think that's probably fine with me. I've had a very strange just sort of like experience with this season because it hasn't been particularly fun. Mm-hmm. It's been a lot of noise. Like, I've enjoyed the on-court product quite a bit, and there have been some, some flourishes where they look like this unstoppable monster of a team, but it hasn't always been there, and like the Kawhi stuff's always kind of been in the background. It's thankfully been a lot quieter than the Kyrie and KD stuff going on with their teams. And I thank Kawhi for being a mute for that. But like, it's just, it's not terribly, terribly enjoyable. And I found myself like all season long, just like wishing I was like a Kings fan or even a Bucks fan, although there's expectation now with the Bucks and like having Giannis is its own sort of ticking time bomb. But like with the Kings, it's just like, yeah, this is like what it was like in 2013-14 for the Raptors, where there's no expectations. They're like really fun and young, and you can sense some good things coming, and they haven't been swept by the Wizards yet. It's fantastic. It's just all delightful. And I kind of miss that. No expectations is where I like my sweet spot as a fan is. And so it's sort of weird. I'm not okay if Kawhi loses, like leaves in the offseason, because like that'll suck and that'll set the franchise back. It was all part of the gamble, and I think you make the trade 1,000 times out of 1,000. I have no problem with the trade whatsoever. And obviously I hope he stays, but if he leaves, like I can talk myself into the post Kawhi era pretty easily. It's like, all right, Pascal Siakam's going to probably put up like 22 a game and they'll win 34 games. They'll probably trade Kyle and that'll end that era, which will suck. But they'll sort of just sort of, I guess I believe in Masai Ujiri's ability to rebuild the team, I guess, in a way that I never would have with like Colangelo or Rob Babcock in the past. So I'm open to the idea of them not being good and sort of refreshing and sort of just not having expectations sit over the team anymore. It's very strange. I know this is like a very non-dunked on take to have. Like, I just like, do I care about titles? Not really. It's fine. Like, I just want to be entertained and have it be fun. And of course, if Kawhi stays, I'll change my tune and be like, yeah, they're amazing. What a model franchise. And Kawhi's going to be here and they're going to win titles and all this stuff. But if he leaves, I can talk myself into it being okay.
If he does leave, and let's say they go fire sale, and the worst case scenario, I mean, the worst case scenario is probably Gasol opting in after Kawhi leaves, because that just makes it a lot tougher to kind of tear down. Sure. But let's say he does leave. Would you rather have the Raptors roster or the Cavs with R.J. Barrett if they get R.J. Barrett in the draft?
Well, probably the Cavs. I mean, R.J. Barrett's awesome. Unless you're a draft Nick who thinks he's terrible and will be awful.
Oh, God. Draft nerds.
He should be drafted no higher than the third pick. yeah, honestly, I don't watch any college basketball because it's exploitation ball. But obviously if RJ's on the Cavs, that would suck. And I would be envious of that. And I think with like, I mean,
part of why I think he's going to end up on the Cavs is because the universe seems to conspire against Raptors fans. And that would be like the ultimate. Kawhi leaves, both teams are rebuilding again. Yeah. And the Cavs have RJ. Like, that would be absolutely hysterical.
Yeah, although, like, what else would they have around RJ?
Jetty. Like, Kevin Love is... What the hell are you talking about, Jetty?
Yeah, let's pull up his numbers. Are they good? I don't know. Probably not.
Jetty has been okay, the last two games he has not been as good. But Jetty has been awesome.
He's got, like, okay numbers. He looks like a perfect guy to shepherd you through a bad era of basketball before replacing him with a better small forward.
He is a fine young fellow, let me tell you that.
I mean, Jamari Moon, fine young fellow.
So. Oh, that's a little too real just because of the shared pain that both Raptors and Cavs fans have over that. But no, like I'd mess around with a Sexton, Jetty, RJ, Love, and Tristan lineup. Nance off the bench. It's fine. Like this year has been kind of the best case scenario, just because Kevin Love going down has made them a lot worse than they actually were, and has now basically kind of locked them into the best possible lottery odds. Which, I mean, the lottery odds are all fucked up this year, but they've at least put themselves in the best possible position to get a player that matters in the draft, which. Considering it's a wing heavy draft, makes me feel pretty good about getting a guy that fits in. But yeah, it would just be interesting to see both teams kind of go on the rebuild again. And, cause they kind of mirrored themselves at one point there when, the Cavs took Tristan, Raptors took JV, and they're both kind of on the come up at the same time. And that was fun. Like, let's go back to that.
Except the NBA didn't conspire to give the Raptors all the first overall picks.
Oh, of course. Poor you. We're just better at the lottery. We're just better at the lottery than you guys are, you know?
Yeah. I just pulled the box score of the game that I was talking about earlier. The second game post LeBron and Bosch for the Cavs and Raps.
Oh, yeah.
You want to go through the box score here? Is this?
Yeah. Yeah. This is one of my favorite segments for the podcast, reading.
You want to guess who played for the Cavs?
Oh, crap. In that game, Pargo? Or was that too early in the season for Pargo?
There was no Pargo, no.
He didn't play. Okay. What month? What month is this?
October. October 29th, 2010.
Okay, October 29th. So that'd be Mo Williams.
No Mo Williams.
Oh, is he? Okay, he got hurt. Vergeau is still healthy then?
There's no Vergeau.
Okay, so he...
I'm going to just read the box score to you.
Wow.
Please, the Cavs starting five was Anthony Parker, Jamario Moon, of course.
Of course.
Ramon Sessions.
Oh, yeah.
Who went 1 of 10 from the field. Ryan Hollins and J.J. Hickson filled out the starting five.
Ryan Hollins, the hot take god. He stepped into that role very, very easily.
He's a better version of Paul Pierce at that for sure. Everyone's a better version of Paul Pierce at everything, but
right. I was about to say he's probably like he's Paul Pierce without the Boston hype machine. He is equally good in my opinion.
Paul Pierce without performative wheelchairs. on the bench for this Cavs team was Daniel Gibson.
Booby.
Sorry, that's a faux pas on my part. Antoine Jameson played in this game. Ugh. Jawad Williams took 10 shots in this game. He was 3 of 10.
Of course he did.
Leon Poe, Manny Harris, Samardo Samuels, and Joey Graham.
Good old Slamardo.
You're beginning to see exactly why this game broke me in my desire to watch basketball. The Raptors started Bargs, Linus Klaser, Reggie Evans, DeMar, and Jarrett Jack.
Man, when I think of disappointing small forwards that the Raptors tried out, Klaser is always the one I forget.
It's actually messed up that they have Kawhi now. It doesn't make any sense. And I guess it makes sense if he leaves because that'll continue like the defense against the dark arts ass curse on that position for the Raptors. But oh my God. Jarrett Jack, who is still around after he was supposed to be the guy that kept Chris Bosh here because they were Georgia Tech buddies.
Jarrett Jack was supposed to take the Cavs to the playoffs. Him and Kyrie were going to be that 1-2 punch that they needed.
Jarrett Jack was supposed to do a lot of things for a lot of teams and did none of them, except be bad for the Knicks last year.
God, I forgot he was in the league last year. That's good for him.
Yeah. Also, Jose Calderon, Barbosa, Sonny Weems, Amir Johnson, shout out to the young guns, David Anderson, Julian Wright, and Marcus Banks all played for the Raptors in this game.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's a lot of overlap in players that have been on both the Raptors and Cavs.
Yeah, it's I think it's just kind of a thing with like bad teams where there's like the same fringy dudes who circle around the same. I'm sure there would be a similar thing with like the Nets and like the Hawks of the last few years, like the Nets and the Suns. There's probably a lot of guys with some overlap there too.
Man. All right, okay.
Now that I've like looked at this, I hope the Raptors keep Kawhi, and I feel bad for saying that it might be okay if he left. Because
you just got smacked in the face with the reality of what post Kawhi life will be.
Yeah, no one is clicking on the podcast ever again.
Man, this is the first year where Calderon isn't getting starts. Like, as an undrafted player, he always had like at least 11 starts in a season. He started 32 games for the Cavs, none for Detroit. What a guy. Cavs legend, Jose Calderon. Beloved for the franchise. But thank you again so much for coming on, though, Sean. Really do appreciate it.
Sorry, I'm back. I'm cutting into your end of the show.
Well, there you go. I was actually wrapping it up. I didn't even realize you were gone just because I love the sound of my own voice so much. I was just on a roll.
I'm back now. You can wrap it up with me here now. So go ahead.
you're back just in time for me to tell you to screw off. But
back in time to plug stuff, baby.
Absolutely. Do you want to go ahead and plug your stuff? Go ahead and plug your stuff.
Oh, yeah, okay. Locked On Raptors, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, all the places you get your podcasts. It's sort of daily. It's kind of a lean time right now to do a daily podcast just because, like, it's not that much happening and none of it really matters. So there's that. but I'm doing my best. And, Raptors HQ, I write some stuff. I kind of only write, like, one column now. After every time the Raptors lose, I write a column called What Didn't Suck. about the game that they lost, because I hate wallowing in bad losses in a regular season in which they're going to win like 60 games. It seems silly to me. So I write about the good stuff from losses. Last time I wrote about Serge Ibaka being awesome when they lost to Houston. So that's a thing you can look for me as well, at Woodley Sean on Twitter. And that's about it. I'll stop spamming my stuff now.
There you go. And what about a prediction for Monday's game? Are the Cavs going to upset?
Oh, the Cavs play the Raptors this week. I was wondering why you asked me on the podcast at this time. Now I realize. I'll say the Raptors win, probably. I think Kawhi's going to play because he's not playing on Sunday against Miami. So he'll probably play, and they'll probably win.
I hope Jetty Osman makes you eat your words. Because you disrespected the Turkish LeBron, and it's still kind of sticking with me a little bit.
Apologies for me having a vendetta against Turkish players. Hedo Turkoglu played it for the Raptors at one point, so
man,
they all fail. Enes Kanter, garbage. Actually, no, he's opposed to Turkoglu like in a real life kind of way now. So Enes Kanter is cool with me.
Yeah, I was about to say, be careful what you wish on Enes Kanter, because that can go dark in a hurry.
No, he's good. He's good. He's cool. He's anti-Turk, which is anti-Turkaloo. I guess anti-Turk in general as well. We should probably wrap this before I say something objectionable.
And on that note, before we get into any death wishes on the podcast, I want to thank you again for coming on, Sean. Remember, support our podcast. Support Sean's podcast. Leave a rating. Leave a review. Subscribe. Unsubscribe. Resubscribe. Cook those books. It's the best way to support the show. Support our sponsors. And if you want to be part of our exclusive Discord chat, if you leave a review on iTunes, you can take a screenshot of that, email it to chasedownpod@gmail.com, and we'd be more than happy to send you a link inviting you to the Discord. So thanks again to Sean. Until next time, go Cavs.